Tango Tango Papa 2058, September 8, 2020.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from Hazleton, Pennsylvania. So I was home for a few days for time off. I came back to work on September the 4th. And so I've been back at work for about 4 days at this point. And so I should be going home again, once again, like towards the end of the month is usually, you know, that's when I'll be going home. So probably have about 3 weeks or so before I go home again. So while I was home, of course, they'd completed the guttering while I was gone the last time. And so I, you know, they'd sent me pictures of it. And so I was pretty well already knew what it looked like, and I have to say, I'm in person, I'm very happy with the result. So that was kind of nice to be able to get that job completed fairly quickly, actually. But let's see, what else did I do while I was home? I ended up buying an electric pole saw. These things have existed. Somebody's trying to call me. Who is that? I'm not going to answer that. let me turn that. I'm just going to turn the sound off. If it will let me, it may not let me. That guy's going to drive me crazy. So we'll wait till it quits ringing. Okay, there it quit. Now I'm going to turn the sound off. I just have to remember to turn it back on later. There, he's trying to call back, but we're not going to listen to it ring. So these electric pole saws have existed for some time. Of course, the idea of a pole saw has been around for, it's like a chainsaw that you mount on a pole. Of course, initially there were gas-powered versions, and I really didn't want a gasoline-powered version because of there are disadvantages to it. One of the big disadvantages would be that you have to mix the gasoline. Then the next big disadvantage is the fact that the gasoline, you have to mix it with oil, but then the gasoline becomes stale because unless you use the thing fairly frequently, you either have to run it completely out of gas before you store it, or the gas is going to mess up with the carburation, the parts of the carburetor on the little engine, and you're going to have a devil of a time starting it. And since you're mixing gasoline with oil, the oil ends up attracting dirt. So the thing is, you know, these things are going to get dirty anyway, but once you get a film of oil on something, then it's that much worse. So these things are, you know, and they're smelly and they're noisy, etc., etc. So yeah, with the lithium-ion batteries we have today, it is now actually viable to have a battery-powered one. Now, there are electric ones that you actually have to plug into household current, so you'd have to have a really long extension cord in order to use those. It's just easier to get the cordless version that runs on a lithium-ion battery. So I bought one of those, and my choice was, even though there's lots of, if you look online, let's say at Lowe's.com or HomeDepot.com and other places, there are certainly a lot of different models and brands to choose from. But since I stopped at the Lowe's store that was nearest my house, I ended up just taking the one model that they actually had in a box on the shelf. And that was basically the only one that they had. So it turned out to be a 6-inch. It has a 6-inch saw, a little 6-inch chainsaw. You have to manually oil it, which is not a problem because some of the models have so-called automatic oilers. This one had, you just have to manually oil it with, some sort of motor oil or like a chain, so-called chain and bar oil. I just use some motor oil. And they want you to oil it each time you recharge the battery. And so I used it while I was home there. I used it because I had some limbs that I needed to trim, especially at the end of my driveway, or at the entrance to my driveway, rather close to the entrance. There were these limbs that were sticking out that kept hitting the truck every time I'd pull this company truck either into my driveway or I'd leave. These limbs were reaching out and kind of running into it. And then the other problem, the UPS driver was, the last time I was home, he was complaining about it. So I figured, well, probably time to do something about it. So I did. This thing it had a little extension thing, and it'll either work on initially the 6-foot length, or it's got this 3-foot extension that you put in there, and it's 9 feet. And 9 feet was, that's actually quite high. There's some of them that'll extend on out to 12 feet and maybe even beyond that, but then they become, even at 9 feet, it's kind of, even with a fairly light little electric, chainsaw, because the motor's actually out there near the chain, or, out there by the chain, and it's a pretty, powerful motor. That's a small motor, nonetheless, it's just small. But even that at 9 feet, kind of out on the end of a 9-foot extension pole, is kind of unwieldy. So, but manageable. And so I was, 9 foot's good enough. And so that even, with me standing up and then 9 feet, I was able to reach actually probably, I don't know how far, let's say, at least 12 feet or more. Like a limb that would be off the ground. And so most of the limbs that I was cutting were maybe an inch to an inch and a half in diameter. And so I spent some time, cutting those limbs out by my driveway, and then some other ones. And I actually have a little bit more work that I need to do. But probably just using not even necessarily having to use that saw. I just need to, cut some, use, I guess they're called yard shears, and then just, do some more trimming here and there. So I did that, and then also I was at first, it was looking like I might not be able to mow at all because the forecast was rain every day. But as it turned out, the rain did stop the one day it did stop in the afternoon, so I was able to go ahead and do the mowing and kind of complete that. One thing that did happen when I was getting two sheds now, and so the one of them I had the weed eater. I have this electric weed eater that I bought last year. So I had the weed eater stored in there standing up against this shelf. And so I went in there, you know, opened the door, went in there and grabbed the weed eater and immediately went back outside. And I was getting ready to close the door. And all of a sudden I got stung twice, not just once, but twice. There were these wasps. So I think there must be a wasp nest in there. Probably, I'm guessing up around where the top of the handle was on that, near that, you know, near the shelf that it was leaning against. And I disturbed them. And so here they came, and they, I didn't even see them. I got stung twice on basically kind of on top of the head. That was not a pleasant experience. Head was throbbing there for a while. You know, and I've even now it's been, well, probably close to a week later, or getting close to it, and I still have some pretty good sized bumps where the stings occurred at. So I guess they'll eventually get better. That was kind of an unpleasant experience. I haven't been stung by anything. You know, I've been bitten here and there, but not really stung by a bee or a wasp. And, you know, I don't even know how long. It's been years and years and years. But you can bet that the next time I go in there, because typically, you know, I look for spiders, because spiders are the most likely thing that I'll see in there. And but from now on, I'll also be looking for wasps and potential wasp nests. You know, that was a pretty unpleasant experience. And so they chased me a little bit. So I ran. They, you know, it didn't chase me far, just a few feet. But one of them that stung me, but it did chase me a little bit. So. But I got away from it, and it didn't chase me very far, and then they kind of disappeared, and then I closed after a while I closed the shed door and locked it, and I didn't need anything more from the shed, so maybe I'll go in there in the middle of the winter and see if I can find the wasp nest and dispose of it at that point. You know, pick a really, really cold day and then get rid of it then. Because they'll be, I would think, dormant at that point. You know, and then they have their wasp nest, there for the next generation of wasps. So get rid of it then. So, let's see, did I do anything else while I was home? Not really, I just the normal things. I was able to go to a gun range with my youngest brother and shot one of the boxes of shells that I had purchased, the 45 ACPs. And so the gun pretty well performed flawlessly, and so I got a little bit of practice in with it. Obviously, I need a lot more, and so I think I'll once Trump is reelected and we get over all this election stuff, I think what's going to happen is that the ammunition is going to become cheap again. It's going to kind of flood the market, and at some point supply is going to meet demand, and at that point it'll become cheaper, and then I can really practice, kind of playing with it, because otherwise it's kind of expensive at this point. You know, it's upwards of, with the shipping, it was like 44 cents or something, 44 cents, I think I calculated. With the shipping, with the three boxes of 50 shells, so I bought 150, you know, and it ended up with the shipping, it was like 44 cents a shell. So, is a little bit pricey, but you know, but I think once the price comes down, then you know I'll be able to buy it locally, and it'll be considered at some point it's going to be cheaper and readily available, because at this point I think it's still not readily available because so many people are buying guns, and which I can't blame them. And you know, obviously if you buy a gun, you need ammunition to go with it. So the ammunition factories are running as fast as they possibly can, 24/7, 365. They're cranking out as much ammunition as they can, but they're having a hard time keeping up with the current level of demand. But as I say, I think that situation will improve once Trump is reelected. So, of course, all of the insanity is continuing to go on. They're continuing to push this pandemic, and I have, and I've said all along, I do think it's a real virus. At this point, I don't think it's nearly as deadly as what they say. Because the CDC has came out and admitted that only 6% of the deaths that they've reported have been directly attributable to the virus, and all of the other deaths, they had comorbidities, and some of those were even stretched; they were fake. Somebody could die. There's documented cases where somebody died of a motorcycle accident, and then they said, oh, they died of COVID-19. Because we tested them, and they had COVID-19. And there's plenty of cases where people weren't tested, and they have been notified that they were positive with COVID-19. There was a case I just saw in the last day or two where some woman had died in February, and this was in Texas somewhere. The woman had died in February of something else. And, of course, February was before the so-called lockdown happened in March, mid-March. This woman died in February of some other, some other problem. And, here more than 6 months later, they're coming back. And about 6 months, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. In August, sometime in late August, the local health department of whichever city this was in Texas, I think it may have been Houston, sent her a thing saying, sent the family a thing saying that their mother was had tested positive for COVID-19. Well, how the hell did that happen? She died in February. You know, that's insane. So they're really stretching this. You have elements there are elements out there that want to stretch this and make it seem as bad and as dangerous as they possibly can, because they think this hurts Trump, and it's all about revolving around Trump derangement syndrome. And there really is such a thing as Trump derangement syndrome, but it's not just Trump, it's the Trump supporters. They do not, they're deranged. These people are insane. What have I been saying for months now? These people are crazy. They have lost their minds. They see the world backwards. They literally do see the world backwards. And, how does that happen? Well, I was thinking about that just a while ago. The way our brains work, the way our minds work, we create, basically, maybe creates a strong, that's maybe a little bit not quite the right word. We sort of synthesize or simulate a version of reality of the world around us. We have a physical world, You know, and our brain does a pretty good job of being able to simulate a high definition version of the physical world around us. And then we also have, we do the same thing in a, let's say, a non-physical sense. So how things work socially, how we relate to other human beings, what is relevant, what is irrelevant. Now, those models of behavior, those models, specifically the models of behavior, are and how we interact socially, those are influenced by our personality traits. There are five personality traits, so-called Big Five, and every one of us has a mix of those. We may be strong in one or two and weaker in the other elements. And I won't go into those, but you can look them up. Just look up Big Five personality traits and you'll find a list of them. So those personality traits kind of help determine how we see the world, or, the tendency we have of, kind of seeing the, especially from a social standpoint, not necessarily from a physical standpoint, because a physical standpoint is, a building is a building and a road is a road, etc., etc. So the models of those that our brain represents, we seem to somehow share, as human beings, we seem to somehow share pretty good basis for how those models are constructed to a large extent. The social aspect of it is a little bit different thing. Now, what also figures into it, besides the so-called big five personality traits, is, what is it? It's resentment. Human beings, the other variable, as human beings, we have this proclivity, this tendency to want to play God in our own minds. And if you don't think that's there, you're fooling yourself. We all have it. And how do we do that? The only way really at the root of it is resentment. We resent as if in our own minds we're God, sort of hurling the mental thunderbolts at people and places and things that we resent. And, of course, resentment ends up turning us into wrong things. And then what's the next step? Why we're proud of it. We're proud of what resentment turns us into. We're proud of killing our babies. We're proud of resenting our jobs, etc., etc. And it can end up kind of becoming a million things, and so we end up with a resentment-based identity that sees the world backwards. Wrong looks right, right looks wrong. Now, in order to see the world, it's not possible to see all of, for us as human beings, we can't really take all of the facts into account. It's just not possible. So what our brains do is sort of filter down. Our brains are sort of constantly filtering down, figuring out what is important and discarding what isn't important. And so we end up with a subset of facts. But the problem is that our ego, the wrong side of our ego, can cause us to end up discarding the wrong facts, the wrong, you know, the really relevant subset of facts. The wrong side of our ego causes us just to discard that. So then we end up with in a, you know, kind of a fantasy world, a world that doesn't exist. We have to help have someone help us keep that fantasy going. Almost like a parasite on reality. But, you know, that requires other people to kind of help us. Sort of, you know, that's sort of the way socialism, you know, initially socialism seems to work. Communism seems, you know, seems to work, but it only works to the extent that it can, that it's able to parasite off of people producing goods and services. And so it starts out with parents spoiling their kids. And the kids resent the parents. The kids somehow know they've been robbed. They haven't been taught how to work, to fend for themselves, and they're taught to be parasites. And the state takes over where the parents, you know, with the parents' failure. So then they begin, they demand everything, and they act like little brats. And we have millions of them, probably. They're at least certainly in the thousands. I'd say in the it's hard to tell, because in the thousands are in the streets. You know, we've got hundreds and thousands of them, you know, screaming and moaning and groaning in the streets, and they want to tear the country down, and, you know, they think they want a Marxist utopia. Of course, they would be the first ones to die if that ever happened. They would be the first ones executed if that were ever to come to pass. But they're stupid. They're emotional. They're resentful. They see everything as about being about them. They're psychotic. Whose fault is it? It's the parents' fault. The parents were the ones that enabled it. And I will say this, if you're a parent, I'm not a parent. I like to disarm myself right up front. I'm not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent. However, if you are a parent and you spoil your kid, if you've got a kid that's living in your basement, or if you've got a kid, maybe you don't have a basement, but you've got a kid living at home, a 20, 30-year-old quote-unquote kid that you're supporting, you feel sorry, oh, they can't find a job, you're the problem. You're helping to destroy the country. You created a monster. The best possible thing that you could do would be to throw that adult kid out. Out they go. Out of the nest they go. Either learn to sink or swim. Learn to swim. Really, they should be tossed out at age 18. Reach age 18, out they go. But they don't have a real grasp of the world. They've got a false grasp of reality. They see the world backwards. They think everything is owed to them. And at the same time, they resent the fact that everything's been handed to them. They have no meaning in their existence. There's no meaning to existence. If everything's handed to you, you're not able to figure things out for yourself. What meaning of existence is there? There is none. The only thing that they can feel is the resentment and tearing things down, and that's the only pleasure that they can possibly have, such as it is to try to tear things down. Or maybe they're one of the ones that decide to, you know, shoot up a classroom and then kill themselves. Or shoot up something or other and then shoot themselves. Inflict the maximum amount of misery that they possibly can on the world before they exit it. As a way of sort of shaking their fist at God. How pathetic a parent would be to spoil a kid. It's awful. So we as human beings it's not possible for us to take all of the facts into account. We can't see. Even if our minds are functioning perfectly, we cannot see all of the facts. It's not possible. We have to kind of do a form of triage, almost like a sensory triage, in order to be able to function in the world, to function socially, to function even in the physical world. We have to be able to know what we can throw away and ignore, what data that we can ignore, what data we need to concentrate on in order to successfully negotiate, to successfully function. That's true both in the physical sense and in the non-physical sense, in a social sense. Or you could say in a spiritual sense. Spiritual meaning non-physical. But in order to be able to even have a chance at getting reality right, getting a right representation of reality, we have to get rid of resentment. Now, there's a line in the Bible, and I'm paraphrasing. If my people who are called by my name, meaning my nature, because name always means nature, so you're called by God's nature, and some of us are. Only you know that if you are or not, will seek my face, or humble themselves and seek my face. What does that mean? What does it mean to humble yourself? People think you know, there's this idea that you just sort of really lower yourself and you think less of yourself. It's, you know, and that's missing the point. What does it mean to humble yourself? It means to get rid of your stupid resentment. Because that, the resentment, and then the resulting, the subsequent pride that you have and what resentment turns you into, that is what you're, the wrong side of your ego feeds off of. So to humble yourself means to starve the wrong side of your ego. How do you starve the wrong side of your ego? You get rid of the resentment. And now the resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. So you can have resentment and not even be aware of it. But you have to get rid of, to humble yourself means to get rid of resentment and really do it, not just pay it lip service. Or come back and say, well, I'm going to turn my this negative resentment into a positive. People do think that all the time. That's just a silly rationalization. Can't be done. Cannot be done. Can't turn a negative into a positive. In this case, you've got to get rid of the resentment. And that means you have to look at yourself in the light of conscience. Now, what does it mean to seek God's face? Because I've often wondered, what does that mean? Well, when you look at someone's face, what are you doing? You're looking, you know, there's all kinds of things. When you look at a human being face, and not one with a mask on it, but you look at a human, you know, when one, you know, you look at a human being face, there are all kinds of conscious and subconscious things happening in your mind. You can almost read people's minds by watching their eyes, by watching, what are they looking at? What are they looking at? When we're, you know, let's say you're having a conversation with anyone. It could be a friend, it could be a family member, it could be whatever. Or it could be a perfect stranger, but let's say you're having a conversation. Whether you realize it or not, you're looking at what are they looking at? There's some part of your brain that is, you know, constantly analyzing what are they doing? What's their body language? Are they really interested in this conversation? What are they, you know, can I trust what they're saying? Is what they're saying sincere? And those things are kind of going on the whole time and without us even being conscious of it. So I believe, here's what I think, you know, to seek God's face, what does God think? What if we can get our own resentment out of the way, in other words, what are the real facts? What are the facts that God sees? What is reality? What is the true reality and not the false reality that's kind of created by me wanting to play God in my own mind via resentment and then being proud of it, proud of what it turns me into? What is the reality? And even then, I might not be able to see all the facts. But if I see some of the right facts, if I can see at least a portion of the right facts, then I think that's where at least one type of faith can come in. And I can have faith that I may not see all the facts. But I can have faith in my Creator. I can have faith to a certain extent in the future. And I think that that's where peace that passes understanding comes from. If you can, you have to get rid of your own resentment. And I mean sincerely get rid of it. And that means you can't get rid of it yourself. You have to, the only way you can get it, that it can be removed, is if you are willing to see it. You, that's the one thing that you have, is a willingness to see it, a willingness to not run away when your conscience shows it to you. You have to be willing to remain still and allow your conscience to get you. Whenever, you know, your conscience will kind of approach you. When, you know, when you're not looking, it's going to kind of come. Here it comes. And don't run away from it. Don't try to distract yourself away from it. Just let it get you. Let it have its way with you. Be willing to see your own resentment. So, anyway, think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off, get it uploaded. I went to bed last night, I don't know, it was about 9 o'clock, something like that, Eastern time. I woke up at midnight, and I was awake probably for about 3 hours. So I was, you know, listening to an audiobook for about 3 hours, and then I you know, started to get a little drowsy again, so I shut that off, and I went back to sleep. And I finally got up, it was about 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning. When I finally woke up and decided, I'd woke up a few times, but I decided it was time to get up. So I got up, and so the load that I'm picking up is not supposed to be ready until about 3 a.m. And so at this point, I, you know, maybe I'll lay down a little bit later and attempt to sleep a bit more. Right now, I'm pretty much wide awake. What time is it? It is about 3:30 in the afternoon. So, just, you know, so it's, you know, about 11 and a half hours, and, you know, or about, let's say 12 hours from when I hopefully will be leaving here and then heading towards Auburn, Indiana. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.